November 17th, 2012, Salvador Alvarenga, a 36-year-old fisherman, set out on a typical two-day fishing trip off the coast of Mexico from a village called Costa Azul, where he lived. His boat was just 25 feet long. With a gas outboard engine, some call it a banana-type boat. It was just a hull, basically. It had no top. It had a giant cooler in the center of the boat to haul his usual catch of about 1,000 pounds of mahi-mahi, tuna, shark, basically whatever he could catch on his. And he had hired this particular day his normal helper, who could not go with him as normal to help him work. He hired a young man, a 22-year-old man named Cordoba. He was a local soccer player in the local town, but he had never been fishing before, never been on a boat, but he offered him $50 to help him go fishing on a two-day fishing trip that he was about to take. But this fishing trip was going to be like no other fishing trip for Salvador, who had done it most of his life. The coast there off of Mexico was very fished out, so most fishermen would have to travel 50 miles or more to go and find fish. It was a dangerous time of the year to do fishing, let alone being dangerous most times going that far, but especially the time of year that he went, in November. But Salvador needed to fish to survive for him and his family. The boat was loaded with equipment, including 70 gallons of gasoline, 16 gallons of water, 50 pounds of sardines for bait, 700 hooks, lines, miles of line, harpoons, 3 knives, 3 buckets for bailing, a mobile phone he kept in a plastic dry bag, a GPS tracking device, which was not waterproof, a two-way radio, which was half charged, and several wrenches and 200 pounds of ice. He was set to go. After catching their fish of 1,100 pounds, which was a successful trip, Salvador and Cordoba headed back home. As the weather began to quickly deteriorate, Salvador tried to maneuver through waves like a surfer trying to glide and slice his way through. The storm became so strong that the harbor masters along the Mexican coastline barred fishing boats from heading out to sea. But Salvador was already out there. He was desperately trying to get back home. They were bailing water out as fast as they could with their 3 buckets they had. They were exhausted from hours of fighting the sea and the salt water in their boat. They could see the mountain near the village. They knew where it was at in the distance. But when they were about 2 hours from land, their motors started coughing and sputtering and finally quit. Salvador pulled out his radio and called his boss that he worked for. He says this, he says, Willie, the motor is ruined. Willie responds back saying, calm down, man, calm down. Give me your coordinates. Salvador said, we have no GPS. It's not functioning. It had gotten wet. Willie said, lay anchor. We have no anchor. Salvador had noticed it was missing the night before he took his trip. But he thought he would need it anyway since he was going deep sea fishing on this mission. The waves were unpredictable, slapping each other in midair, joining forces to create swells that raised them 3 stories high for a brief moment, and then they would drop like an elevator. Salvador realized at that point that he would have to dump all of his catch on the ocean because it was making the boat top heavy, unstable. Then they tossed their ice and their extra gasoline that they didn't need. But at 10 a.m., the radio died. And it was before noon on that day of the storm that Salvador knew it was likely, he knew it was going to likely last 5 days. Losing the GPS had been an inconvenience, but he could still see the mountains. But when his motor failed, disaster struck. But now, without a radio contact, they were completely on their own. I'm going to leave this story just for a moment. Years ago, when my brother and I used to go do a lot of fishing, we love fishing and diving. And one of the things you always worry about when you're out on the ocean is having engine trouble. One day when we were out dolphin fishing and trolling, we were out there and we got in a school of dolphin. And we never turn our motor off when we're way out. And the motor quit. We were out of sight of any land anywhere. There's no worse feeling than having your engine quit without warning. Thankfully, we looked around and tried to figure out as we were pulling dolphin in, and panic was running through our minds, will this engine start? Because we had been broke down many times before, but not this far out. We come to find out that one of the dolphins we had caught had flipped the ignition switch off. We breathed a sigh of relief when we started that engine back up because there was no land in sight anywhere, any direction, no buildings, nothing. Only a compass to get you back home. There weren't radios back then. Well, there were radios, but ours didn't work. No cell phones, no GPSs when we used to do our fishing. Well, brethren, as we live this Christian life, we are going to go through many storms, as Salvador was in, both physical storms we will face and spiritual storms. But how do we remain calm while in the storm we're in? Our storms will probably not be about ships or the sea, but our storms can be every bit as traumatic because they are our storms. Our personal storms about our life and the storms that we face. Well, he's already been mentioned several times today. An apostle who went through more storms in his lifetime than any other apostle. That was the Apostle Paul. How many times have we been referenced today what the Apostle Paul says? Let's take our Bibles, let's turn over there. Let's turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And here Paul's talking in verse 23. He says, there are ministers of Christ. Are there ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more in labors, more abundant in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. Paul knew what it was like to be shipwrecked. A night and a day I've been in the deep. Most likely after the shipwreck, he had to tread water and swim. In journeys often, in perils of waters, which he's already mentioned, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city. These are dangers that he faced, storms that he faced in his personal life, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. The Apostle Paul was famous for going through, as I said, more storms of life, both physically mentally, spiritually. We're going to look at one of those today in particular, one of those storms. Late in Paul's life, about 58 AD, he visited Jerusalem for the last time. And as he entered the temple there, there were Jews visiting from Asia who knew who the Apostle Paul was. They recognized him, they heard of him, and they were stirred up, the whole crowd, and they laid hands on him. And the mob cried out, "Men of Israel, help. This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law in this place. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple. He has defiled his holy place." This takes place in the book of Acts in chapter 21, where he talks about this. You don't have to turn there. But it says this. In Acts 21, verse 35, it says that all the city was in an uproar, and they dragged him out of the temple as he was preaching. They dragged him out of the temple to beat him, and would have beat him to death, except the Roman soldiers stopped them. That's how much they hated the Apostle Paul. But in Acts 21:35, it says this. It says that the mob was so violent that when the soldiers reached the stairs of the barracks where they took him, the Roman soldiers, they had to lift Paul up and carry him to protect him. They wanted to grab him and beat him and kill him right then and there to protect him. So when Paul was finally safe from the mob, he makes a very unusual request from a Roman commander in charge. He asked to speak to the mob. You know, when I think of, and I read the life of Paul and some of the things he went to, what runs through my mind sometimes is Braveheart with Mel Gibson. I picture a Mel Gibson type of a person Paul was before his conversion and after his conversion. He asked to speak to the mob. He was finally free of them, and he immediately asked to speak to them, and the commander actually gave him permission to speak to them. And Paul spoke, it said, from the heart. Scriptures say he spoke from the heart when he talked to the people who were wanting him dead, sincerely telling his own story before his conversion. He told them how he personally saw to the imprisonment and death of Christian men and women. He admitted what he did in his past. He explained also of his conversion on that road to Damascus when Christ spoke to him. But Paul's speech, it says, angered the mob and only fanned their flames of resentment against him. And the crowd called still for his death. Later, after 2 years of imprisonment in Caesarea, which is on the coast, just north of Jerusalem on the coast, they sent Paul on his way to Rome to appeal to Caesar because of his arrest that day in Jerusalem. He spent 2 years there in prison. He didn't want to go back to Jerusalem because he knew what they would do, so he appealed to go to Caesar in Rome, and they granted him that. Which brings us to the event I most want to focus on this afternoon, brethren. One of Paul's biggest storms that he faced in his life as a Christian. You might ask, which storm is he talking about? You know, Paul's life, because he had plenty of storms, as we read there in Corinthians. Plenty of storms, mentally, physically, spiritually. You know, I said that he was been shipwrecked already 3 times. In his life, in his travels. The shipwreck I'm going to talk to you about today is his 4th shipwreck that he encountered, the Apostle Paul. This one happened after those 3 I mentioned, in 2 Corinthians we read, and it's found in the book of Acts where we're going to take it up. It's the most detailed account of anything in the Bible of a shipwreck. Take your Bibles and turn over to Acts chapter 27. Acts chapter 27. You know, the Apostle Luke, who traveled with Paul when he was going from Caesarea to Rome, he traveled with him and he wrote these accounts. He wrote of that shipwreck as he traveled with him on board the ship with the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul was delivered to a Roman centurion named Julius, along with some other prisoners, who were all headed for Rome as well in the autumn of 60 AD, after he had served his 2 years. Here in chapter 27, we'll begin reading. And we see in the beginning of chapter 27 where Paul has already left Caesarea and he's traveling on his way, and he changes ships in Myra over there, in the city of Myra. He changes ships, and now he's on the Alexandrian, a huge ship, probably one of the largest ones he was on. And they're sailing down towards Crete, and Paul knows the island of Crete. As they're going down that way, they couldn't go west because of the wind, so they said to sail down to Crete. And in verse 9, it says this, Paul says, he says, "Now when much time had been spent, and sailing was now dangerous." Remember, this was in the fall of the year. It says, "The fast was already over," speaking of the Day of Atonement. "Paul advised them, saying, 'Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also of our lives.'" He was begging and pleading with them. "Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than those things spoken of by Paul. And because the harbor was unsuitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, and by any means there could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, opening toward the southwest and northwest, and winter there." Brethren, lesson number one in Paul's journeys that we can learn on this trip is this. Sometimes in life, circumstances are beyond our control. They just are. Circumstances are beyond our control. Paul was a prisoner. He wasn't set free. He was to be delivered to Rome. He couldn't get off that ship. They wouldn't listen to him. It was beyond his control. And I know we've all probably had those things in our lives that you can think of. Circumstances that are beyond your control. I know years ago when I was a young teenager, I know probably some of you heard me say this before, I was drafted by the Selective Service. And when you're drafted back when the Vietnam War is going on, it's beyond your control what you do with your life. They tell you where to go and what to do. You have no choice. Thankfully, I was blessed with becoming a conscientious objector, that's how I got down here to Florida. But it was beyond my control. It was either that or go to jail. That was my choices. So sometimes in life, things come along that are beyond our control. There are storms that we know that come that are beyond our control. We've had a few of those hit. I went through Andrew. Even Irma did some damage. They're beyond our control. As much as the Apostle Paul warned of disaster, if the ship continued on sailing, we could say it continued on sailing. We could say much the same about the course of this world we're in. It is set on a course set for disaster, just like the ship that Paul was on. But they didn't listen to Paul, and he had no choice but to stay on that ship. As I said, he was a prisoner. He couldn't leave. He couldn't change their minds. Well, we will have those in our lives. We live in a world that lives contrary to God's laws and his way. Christ prayed, and he said this prayer. We read this. So Jesus prayed to the Father, that the Father, on Passover, we read this. He said, Father, that not take us out of this world, but protect us from Satan, and we must live in this world, yet not be a part of it. We read those scriptures, Passover. But also, just like Paul, there are times in our lives that we are living in, circumstances that, as I've mentioned, are beyond our control. There are many situations in life that are beyond control. We have to face them with God's help, don't we? We know that. Sometimes it's like the Apostle Paul. We are like prisoners on a ship in a storm. Sometimes circumstances beyond our control. The second lesson we can learn from Paul's trip is don't jump ship. Don't jump ship. Soon after Paul's warnings were ignored, winds came, just like he said. And they continued, it said, for 14 long days. 14 long days and nights. It says down here in Acts 27, verse 18, it says, and because they were exceedingly tossed by the winds, the next day they lightened the ship, and the third day they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. Now, the correct translation of that tackle is the ship's gear. It means everything on the boat that they could take care of, including lowering the sails on that ship. Just like Salvador had to do in his storm that he was in, he had to throw everything over to stabilize that boat. Let's read in verse 20 of Acts 27. It says this, it says, now when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us, it means the winds were blowing hard, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. They'd given up after 14 days of this. But after long abstinence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. He's telling them again, I told you so. Well, from Crete to where the ship finally shipwrecks, it's 476 miles of sailing across the ocean. Pretty good distance. Just wasn't a short one across a little area. It was a big span of water. He says in verse 22, and now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. So he told them, he gave them encouragement. You're not going to die. Only the ship will. For there stood by me this night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar. That's what the angel told him. And indeed, God has granted you all those who sail with you. That was a promise. Therefore, take heart, men, for I believe God, that it will be just as it was told to me. However, we must run aground on a certain island. So he knew that was what eventually was going to happen. But when the 14th night day had come, as we were driven up and down the Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors sensed they were drawing near some land. Salvador, the Mexican fisherman, also tried, just as Paul did here, to encourage Cordova. Remember, that's his fishing partner that he hired for $50. Every day on his little boat, he tried to encourage him. But Cordova lost hope early on, and no matter how much Salvador tried to talk to him and pray with him every day, Cordova just gave up. Just as these men said here, All hope was finally lost. They gave up. Even though they were able to eat raw seabirds and turtles and fish, after 2 months of floating and drifting, 2 months at sea, Cordoba had begun a physical and mental decline. They were on the same boat, but headed on different directions in their minds. Cordoba made a drastic decision. He began to refuse all food and water. As we'll read, that's what these men did on this boat. They weren't eating either. He began to refuse all food and water. Depression was shutting his body down, and soon he died on that boat, and Salvador buried him at sea. Some of these sailors on the ship that Paul was on also, as I said, lost hope as well. Even though Paul would encourage them and told them that they would be safe, all 276 people on this ship wasn't a small ship. It was a grain ship with 276 people on that ship. That they would live as long as they stayed on the ship until it would run aground. The sailors saw later that they were nearing land and were told to drop 4 anchors. Well, they didn't do that. They dropped some of the anchors. And some of the sailors only pretended to let anchors down, but they were instead letting their lifeboats down to escape. Because they feared the ship running aground on those rocks would break up, and it did. When Paul saw that they intended to leave the ship, he told the centurion that unless these men stay in this ship, that they will not be saved. They will lose their lives. When the centurion told them that, they immediately cut the lifeboats and decided to stay with the ship. They believed Paul. You know, when we find ourselves in a seemingly impossible situation like the one Paul is in right now, and the ship's crew found themselves and feel like we are going through it all alone, Paul knew he wasn't going through it all alone. Written by Jesus Christ's half-brother, James, it says this. It says, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. That's a wonderful promise. If we draw near to God, he will draw near to you. Don't lose hope. Stay close to God. Stay close to God. You are not alone, as we've heard. And don't jump ship. Listen, they should have listened to Paul. Don't jump ship. And they finally did listen and didn't jump ship. The third lesson we can learn from this trip is to remain calm in the storm. That's not easy. Remain calm in a storm. Let's read what it says here in Acts 27, verse 33. It says, and as the day was about to dawn, Paul employed them all to take food, saying, remember they hadn't eaten. Today is the 14th day, and you have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. They were weak. They were ready to give up. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you. And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then they were all, what does it say? Encouraged, and also took food themselves. The Apostle Paul knew how important it would be for everyone on that ship to remain calm in this situation. They were about to face one of the most violent shipwrecks when they hit that island. So by keeping them busy and strong, both physically, mentally, they prepared their ship for their crash on the shore. They began preparing their ship. The next verses say, and in all were 276 persons on the ship. So when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and threw out what wheat they had to the sea, getting ready for their crash. You know, it's very important to remain calm. When we are caught in a storm, any storm in life, Mr. Haefeli mentioned about Joshua this morning, how Joshua put his face to the ground and God told him to get up. You know, we say we're to remain calm. Look what happened here. God helped the prophet Elijah to remain calm when he was suffering deep depression after Queen Jezebel threatened to have her soldiers kill him. Remember the story? God encouraged Elijah by speaking to him when he fled to that cave. He heard, with all the winds and earthquake outside, he heard a small, still voice. A small, still voice. Ask Elijah, kind of like he was asking Joshua. Asking Elijah, what are you doing here? And Elijah was hiding out in that cave, and God gave Elijah an important job. He wasn't through with him. He told him he had three very important duties for him to perform immediately, to get out of this cave and go do these things, to anoint two kings and a prophet. And that's just what Elijah needed. He needed God's encouragement, words, and duties to perform to give Elijah a sense of purpose once again, to get him out of the state of mind that he was in. And remember also what God told Moses when Pharaoh's army was chasing them, when they left Egypt and there was nowhere to go but into the Red Sea? God told Moses this. He says, tell the people, do not be afraid. Same thing. Stand still. Be calm. Stand still, be calm. And see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians you see today, you shall see them again no more forever. For the Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. That's what he told them. Be calm. God is going to fight this for you. He's going to perform these miracles, the storm that you're facing. God also encourages us in times of storms, which helps us to stay calm. Mr. Haefeli covered many things this morning. And we can also do things ourselves to help stay calm. After Moses' death, God wanted to encourage Joshua, Moses' successor. Mr. Haefeli read this morning. Joshua was given the seemingly impossible job of leading the children of Israel into the promised land. And the famous scripture in Joshua 1:9 says this, Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Those are wonderful promises that he gave him with the responsibility that he had. Going back to the account of Salvador, where we left off with him, still on his small boat, after 2 months at sea, after his friend Cordoba had just died, for the first time, Salvador began to panic. He cried for hours when he woke up. Later, he was terrified. He asked himself, "What can I do alone without anyone to speak with?" He thought, why had Cordoba died and not me after 2 months? He had thoughts of ending his life at that time, but he knew that it was wrong. He knew it was wrong and against God's laws. So that was out of the question. Even though he wasn't a particularly religious man, he was not, he admitted that, He remembered what his mother had taught him growing up long ago. So he decided to put his trust in God and keep his mind and body busy to put purpose into his life. Every sunrise and every sunset, he could see the best in vision to look for ships on the horizon. He could identify even a small speck on the horizon as a ship. He saw trans-Pacific container ships and sea barges, but he saw no visible crew on them. He just saw them at a distance. Those sightings pumped him up with energy of hope. And he would wave. He would jump up and down his boat for hours as it took that ship to go by, hoping someone would see him. He said at least 20 containers had gone by, and no one had stopped. Salvador also started something else, he said. His mornings, he would start out with a long walk, he said. Think, what do you mean, a long walk? He's on a 25-foot boat. You may ask that. Well, how could he do that? Salvador would stroll back and forth on the boat and imagine that he was wandering through this world or places where he grew up. By doing this, he could make himself believe that he was actually doing something, not just sitting there, thinking about dying. He would remember things about his family and friends, and he did what he could to keep his mind positive and busy and insulating himself from the bleak reality he was really in. Also, he would sing hymns, and of course, he prayed. He also kept busy by capturing his food, his fish, with his hands, and he found plastic containers and bags from the ships, threw overboard, which he used to catch his rainwater and save it to drink. He even found occasionally vegetables like carrots floating in the ocean that were thrown overboard the ships. He said he thinks the worst thing that he had to do was to eat jellyfish. He said he could feel the stinging go down his throat as they went down. But what Salvador didn't know at that time, back then, that he would be on this little boat for a total of 438 days. Over a year from now, from where we're here today, 438 days. He still had over a year after his friends died to survive before his boat drifted 7,000 miles. Eventually on a small island, the Marshall Islands, where he eventually was found by two people. There were skeptics who said, this is not possible, this is not true. But after investigating his body, internally and externally, checking the serial numbers on his boat, it was him, and it really traveled the 7,000 miles. Salvador's true story is the longest recorded loss at sea account, and the second longest at sea account happened just 7 years prior to that, earlier, off the same coast of Mexico. But it had five fishermen, 9 months. They were on the sea drifting, 9 months. Two of them men died. But the head fisherman on this boat was famous in his town, the fishing town where he came from, because he was known to always carry a Bible wherever he went. He would carry his Bible with him. He was seen. And when he went on the boat, he had his Bible with him. And for those 9 months, he and his companions read every day from that Bible. They stayed encouraged despite what they were in and gave God the credit for their rescue. Salvador said from a quote in his book titled, 438 Days, a book that was written, He said, I suffered hunger and thirst and extreme loneliness. But I didn't take my life. You only get one chance to live, so appreciate it. The Apostle Paul continued after his shipwreck when all were delivered safely on the island of Malta. He continued his journey to Rome. For 3 months, he stayed in Malta. He was not discouraged in any way. In Malta, you know the stories where the snake bit his hand when they were building the fire. And he gained the trust and the faith of the people there. He healed many, many people. In Acts 28, it talks about. He healed the governor's father, who was dying. He healed him. And many of those people who heard about it came and were healed by Paul. Paul didn't know it, but he still had 7 years of his life left at that point in his life to live. He had more voyages to make on ships and many more people to preach to and witness to. Paul never stopped doing God's work, even up to the end of his life in Rome. In a few more hours, brethren, we will conclude the Days of Unleavened Bread. And we will also continue on our own journeys. We may face storms this coming year. I hope we all have smooth sailing. There's a scripture in the Bible. I'll quote it to you in Philippians 4, verse 6. It says this. It says, be anxious for nothing. It means don't worry. But in everything, Mr. Hafley covered some of this, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, what does it say? Will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. He'll be with us. He will protect us. We will never be alone. It was in April of 1945, less than a month before Nazi Germany's surrender, when our country here was yearning for hope in the darkest days of World War II. When the songwriters, Rodgers and Hammerstein, premiered a play on Broadway, and the play was Carousel. It was about a song of survival. And the song was, You'll Never Walk Alone. And I thought about reciting the lyrics of that song. But I figure you all would probably be singing in your minds the head of the song anyway. So I thought, why not just play the song for you this afternoon as we end these services? Very moving and meaningful song. After which we will have the closing hymn.